Welcome to Thundercast, ThunderTech's podcast where we give you our take on what's new in marketing, what's cool, what's lame, and why you should care.
Hey there, and welcome to Thundercast, ThunderTech's regular podcast. I'm Craig Israel, creative director at ThunderTech, here with my regular co-host, Eric Krylo.
Hey, Craig.
So, Eric, today we have a very special show. It's a roundup show, all sorts of fun things happening in the marketing world, and we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about each.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's definitely going to be an interesting opportunity to dive into a bunch of different topics on one podcast.
So this reminds me of, I don't know if you remember this, when you were a kid, they used to have rerun shows. Like, you're watching your favorite, you know, you're watching Full House, and then for whatever reason, they didn't get a whole script written that week. And so instead, it's like, do you remember that time? And then, like, 65% of the show is rerun. Like, with you're looking at me like you don't remember this.
No, now when you say rerun, you're talking about flashback?
Yeah, it's like a flashback. It's like an episode that already happened.
Well, and I want to say, and I could be wrong about this, but I want to say that like either the final, speaking of Full House, I think like the final episode of Full House, like the finale, I think that that's what it was. Because like if I'm remembering correctly, Mary-Kate and or Ashley Olsen
interchangeable
lost her memory and had amnesia. And I want to say that they kept flashing back. Is that what? Does anyone else know? Does our sound guy know? Have you heard of this?
No, I've never seen the show.
I never watched it.
But anyways, but I totally know what you're getting at, and I would agree. It certainly seems like the script was lacking that week.
It always seemed like a cheap way to produce a whole sitcom without having to invest a lot of time in there. So that's kind of where we're at here today. We don't have a real topic, but we're going to cover a bunch of different topics. So let's jump right in. First, something you might have heard about in the news. The FBI approached Apple and asked them to create a way to hack their iPhones so that they could get at some information. And Apple said, no way.
Yeah, and a couple things I find interesting about this. The first would be, I feel like 11-year-olds can jailbreak an iPhone. So why is the FBI having a difficult time doing this? But I think more so than anything else, and I'm sure that, you know, privacy comes into play in a lot of these things, but I've always been under the impression that the FBI already knows these things. They already have the tools to investigate things like this if it were to happen. So I'm almost thinking less about the security angle and more about just the you know, what power do some of these tech companies have if they're stronger and more powerful than some of our government agencies?
Yeah, I imagine the FBI as a shadowy organization that, like you said, has the best and the brightest, and they should be able to figure this out on their own, but apparently not. You know, from a branding standpoint, I think it's interesting that when Apple first came out and said, no, we're not going to comply with the FBI to do this because we love our customers too much, that there was a huge explosion on Facebook, everybody loving on Apple. Then come to find out like a week later that Apple had acquiesced to the FBI many times previously. But this time, for whatever reason, they stood their ground and said, no, we're not going to build this magic key that you can unlock any iPhone with.
Yeah, and you know, I can certainly respect that and give, you know, kudos to Apple for it. However, what I kind of find a little bit tough to swallow is they say they're, you know, we're doing this for our customers and it's all for you guys. But then 2 weeks later, or 3 weeks later, we're going to hear about a new iPad that's coming out that's $700, $800, $900, or, you know, a new software upgrade. Oh, you have to buy the new device in order to get it. So it seems a little bit strange to me that they relied so much on doing this for the customer rather than, you know, the more obvious reason, which is they don't want their proprietary information to be compromised.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's good brand play for Apple, no doubt.
So do you think that there will be any residuals then moving forward? Do you think that this now sets a precedent for other cell phone manufacturers or other brands that you know, handle, I guess, customers' personal information?
You know, it'd be interesting because I've read that, you know, it's certainly not just Apple. The FBI goes to financial institutions and banks and other people that have – other organizations that have sensitive information that they might need to do, you know, investigations. And usually, as I understand it, FBI gets a subpoena or whatever. They go through the courts and then the company – does what they're told. This is an interesting precedent, right? This is Apple saying, no, we're not going to do it. So does this mean that other banks and whoever will stand up and say, look, forget it. We're not going to help you anymore. And I'll be curious to see what's the fallout from that, right? If there's another terrorist attack and a company saying, yeah, we might have the key to solving this terrorist attack, but we're not going to give it to you because we value security too much. Will there be backlash?
Yeah, it'd certainly be interesting to watch moving forward.
All right. Next topic, Oscar. So the Oscars were just a couple weeks ago as we record this. And we started talking internally about the Oscars as a marketing vehicle versus the Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl obviously is the world's biggest showcase for new advertising, new TV commercials. But the Oscars, they don't get that. They don't have that thing that the Super Bowl does. And why is that, right? The Super Bowl would seem to have a more limited clientele watching compared to the Oscars.
Yeah, you know, a couple things that I think or I believe to be true about this situation, but I first want to start off with, I think this year's Oscars were a little bit different given the buildup surrounding DiCaprio. Knowing that he hadn't won an Oscar in a really long time and then coming out with a really solid movie, I think people were tuned in to see that. I think from a DiCaprio standpoint, I think if he'd have known that all it would have taken was for him to be assaulted by a bear to win an Oscar, he probably would have been in the wilderness sooner looking for bears to be assaulted by.
Yeah, without a doubt.
But I think the biggest thing at play here and why there's a big difference is, for the most part, football is a free sport. People can watch football on television for free. So they do that throughout the year. And now granted, you know, there's cable bills and things like that, but generally you can find football for free. And so I think it encompasses a larger group of people, so they're more concerned and they're more likely to watch the Super Bowl, thus giving sort of more weight to those Super Bowl commercials. Because with movies, as you well know, not only are some of these movies in limited release, so they're not even a lot of the public doesn't even have the capability to see these, but movies are expensive, and so a lot of folks aren't able to go out and see these, so they don't have any rooting interest behind them. So to me, I think that that's what plays the most in this is who has access to the content that's sort of, you know, being that's on display.
Interesting theory. I have a different theory.
I didn't think we were allowed to disagree.
We should recognize that there's some practical considerations here. I'm looking at some stats here that are fairly outdated, but 2010. Here's some stats versus Oscars versus Super Bowl. Super Bowl and that one, the 2010 series season, had 111 million viewers for the Super Bowl, where the Oscars that year had 41 million viewers. So much smaller audience, but you would think that within that audience would be just as big of a deal. But here's my theory, is that I think the Super Bowl early on in advertising tapped into that beloved demographic of the 18 to 35 year old male. And so because of that, a lot of these big names, the ones that still advertise today, like Budweiser, saw it as a great avenue to get their brand out there. And so they went big in the Super Bowl, put a lot of dollars into it, you know, made the famous Clydesdale, all that. And then other advertisers saw them doing that. And then Super Bowl just became the place to advertise. And it's become a little bit of a self-propagating thing, a phenomenon, just because now it is the premier place to advertise your brand, even if, as we've seen, your brand doesn't really seem to fit that demo, that it's now the Super Bowl is about advertising as much as it is about football.
So are you saying, if I'm hearing you correctly, are you saying it's the more hip and cool thing to do?
I think so. I think everybody's advertising in the Super Bowl because everybody's advertising the Super Bowl, right? That it's become the place to be seen. So if, you know, I don't know if, let's say, WeatherTech gets a huge boost by advertising the Super Bowl, but they're advertising every year their floor mats, which I'm sure they're great floor mats, but, you know, is it really worth a $3 million 30-second commercial to advertise it? I don't know.
Well, I wonder what would be interesting to see, and I'm not sure if you have this information, but it would be interesting to see if any brands either co-advertise, so they advertise in both, for the Super Bowl and the Oscars, or if there are sort of, I don't want to call them rejects because that wouldn't be the case, but defectors. So those that used to put their ad money towards Super Bowl ads, but then realized, you know, hey, maybe the Oscars is a better bet for us because we can advertise more often then, or be able to spread our budget around more. I'd like to see sort of how those demographics, or maybe not so much demographics, but how those differences in brands that advertise are. Be interesting to see.
Huh. Interesting. All right, next topic. So recently in Advertising Week, a trade publication, we saw a story about firms that were hiring improv troops to help with their brainstorming. In this particular story, it was San Francisco-based Funworks, which organizes fun workshops, that's all one word, fun workshops, mashed together to brainstorm to help brands. They have some big brands they mention here, HP, Pandora, Virgin America, bring in this improv troupe to help brainstorm. So, Eric, what are your thoughts? Crazy improv troupe improving quality of brainstorming?
You know, I've thought a lot about this since I first saw that headline, and I don't know whether it's their ability to think on the spot that makes them valuable to these companies, or if it's their ability to think differently. But I, from what I've seen of improv, and I've certainly never participated in it myself, and really have only seen one show, and that was on the side of the road, and I'm pretty sure it was just two bums fighting. but it strikes me as though I could see them getting in a room and making a very good impression on higher level executives, simply because they're able to think quickly, they're able to think differently, and they're able to churn out a lot of ideas in one single session. And I think that specific skill set that they have lends itself to brainstorming. Now, being the creative director here at ThunderTech, as you are, you've been involved in, I would say, 99% of the brainstorms that happen here. So do you think I'm on the right track, or do you have a different perspective as to why they might be useful?
Oh, I have a different perspective. So I read this, and this article made me angry, and I'll tell you why. So let me take a step back. I have no doubt that a bunch of quick-witted guys in a room full of people who aren't creatives could get the energy up and get them to get the clients to go into places that normally they wouldn't and throw out unique and interesting ideas. But in general, I hate this notion that what we do as creative people, get together and brainstorm ideas, has been turned into this slapstick clown show, right? This is the kind of perception that you see about the advertising world on TV shows all the time, and it makes me crazy that we're just a bunch of eccentric, wacky guys that aren't really working. We're just coming in here and being quirky and unusual. You know, brainstorming, ideation, coming up with ideas is a talent, and brainstorming is a skill. It's something that we practice on a daily basis until you get to the point where I like to believe we're pretty good at it. So it's not about being funny or being unexpected. It's about being skilled in your discipline, you know, being able to do the thing that clients hire us to do. I worked at an agency years ago where for every brainstorm, they would bring in toys and candy, and they'd put a bunch of shit like that on the table, and it just drives me crazy to think that, look, we're here to do our jobs. We don't need slinkies on the table to be able to do that. Now, all that said, I will say when dealing with a client who isn't in this role, right, who might not be a marketing person or who doesn't do brainstorming or ideation on a daily basis, stuff like that can be helpful, can be to break the ice, like do some silly exercises to get them out of their comfort zone and get them thinking a little bit differently. Sure, that has its place. But in general, when you have marketing professionals, I think we can go into a room and do our job without having, you know, clown pants on.
Right, and I would totally agree with that. And I think that, you know, for those brands out there that may be listening to this or thinking that might be a good idea, I think you hit the nail right on the head. You know, this troop of you know, improvisational folks could come in, and yes, maybe they shake things up. Maybe it does add to the fun aspect of things and help things to be more creative. But what they would be lacking is that strategic execution. So actually being able to come up with these crazy ideas while knowing what the goals are, what the end game is here. And I think that's the aspect that I think would be missing there, and then ultimately the execution. So, hey, you came up with this fantastic idea, but how do you execute it? Across what mediums is this going to work the best?
Yeah, I've said many times that, you know, when you're watching TV with your friend who's not in the industry and they say, I could make a better TV commercial than that, I'd say, yeah, you're probably right. With an unlimited budget and no timeline, I'm sure you could, right? Because being in marketing isn't about being creative. It's about being creative on demand. And I think that's a really big difference. So I'm going to stop before I get on a soapbox and rant for a while about that. Moving on. So our next topic is a loyalty card. So Starbucks announced recently that they're changing the scope of their loyalty card. So I'm not a Starbucks guy. Are you a Starbucks guy?
No, I think I've drank coffee maybe twice in my whole life.
Okay, so as I understand it, the way Starbucks loyalty program used to work is that every time you went into the store, you got a point or a star or a bean or whatever it was, and then you could accumulate those for, I don't know, valuable cash and prizes, presumably.
I'm surprised they don't give points for just being able to pronounce the menu items correctly. I think that's half the battle right there.
So can I say this, that there's a Starbucks on my way to work, and in
no.
general, I know, amazing, right? So in
let me guess, there's also a McDonald's on your way to work too.
So in general, I don't like Starbucks. I'm more of a Dunkin' Donuts sort of guy. But I'm a fan of Starbucks caramel latte because it tastes like candy, and I like my coffee and my alcohol to taste like candy. So I stop there very rarely. And I always have to study the board for a second to know what I'm ordering, because what I want is a medium, which I don't know if you're familiar, is a grande. So I have to order a grande because I don't want to get the stink eye from the barista about, you know, ordering a medium and then having them give me grief. So I digress. The way the loyalty program for Starbucks is working now is that you get points or whatever based upon the amount of your transaction. So not being a loyalty card holder, I could really care one way or the other, but it seems like a good move, right? That now those people who are buying coffee for the entire office and they're walking out there with like a $100 bill, they're getting a lot more for their you know, purchase than just getting a point for the transaction.
Yeah, and you know, I think who this really is going to affect will be the folks that just get those small black coffees. So, you know, the folks that would normally just get that point for each of those small coffees they had, you know, whether it's $3 to $5 or whatever. And to those folks, I would say, what's the difference in getting a small coffee there and getting a small coffee at like a local coffee shop? So, I mean, if you buy local,
that's right.
Right. And I think in this particular case, you know, Starbucks is making a good move. I think it is going to benefit those folks that you talked about that have the larger orders. But for those other folks that may be disenfranchised or disenchanted by this, go to Coffee Bean down the street. Grab yourself a cup of black coffee and buy local. Buy often.
Right on. God bless you, Eric. So something else that happened in the news recently, that Kraft came out and announced that they have changed the formula for their Kraft mac and cheese, that they got rid of any artificial coloring or, I don't know, high fructose corn syrup, I assume. But they've changed the formula, and the interesting thing is they're coming out with some advertisements now to announce it, that they're, you know, no artificial ingredients, et cetera. But it's already been on the shelves for months. And their advertising strategy is it's changed, but it really hasn't because nobody really noticed.
So kind of gets you wondering, like, was this the plan all along? Or was it a situation where they really thought their customers would notice and be sitting there like eating their macaroni and cheese and looking at their wife, you know, honey, this something about this is different. What could it possibly be? I just don't see that they had the foresight to think that way.
Yeah, I think this is a genius move because it's really a no-lose situation for them, that if nobody noticed, like actually happened, they didn't come out and they can say, hey, you know you love it and we changed things and it's better now, but the flavor you love is still the same. But if it had gone disastrously wrong, then they could have quietly pulled it off the shelves, pulled back on it, and they weren't in a position where they have to walk back their marketing where they made a big deal about it. This makes me think of what the Browns did when they introduced their new uniforms, right? There was speculation and talk for weeks or months ahead of time about this new uniform. It's going to be exciting. It was Browns, right? I'm not a sports ball guy, but there was a bunch of hype about it, and when they finally released the uniforms, they weren't that different. Nobody was really that excited about it.
Well, you're certainly right about the excitement part. And I think that there, you know, no one really was excited about it, especially not the folks at Bowling Green University, where the jerseys look identical, which is an embarrassment. But I think it's you're right. I think that they did the right thing by sort of not building up to it and making a huge deal about it, because, you know, as I think people in general, we tend to let our hopes get high.
Mm-hmm.
And if you disappoint someone, they're far more likely to make a bigger deal about it than if they were to find out about it after the fact. And I think that in this particular situation, I wonder if the folks at Kraft thought back to the Coca-Cola when they stopped using, you know, the real sugar that got you all hyped up, mm-hmm. and people complained about that. I really don't think that there was that much of a change in the taste, but because it was known and it was brought to the light, people got to complain about it. So folks that may not have even been able to taste that difference were out there complaining.
Right,
so I wonder if that was part of Kraft's thinking here too, is let's try to avoid that, get it out there, so then when people do complain, we can say, you know, hey, so-and-so, you've been eating Kraft macaroni and cheese for the last 3 years, and you haven't said anything, including the last couple months when it's been changed.
I think it's pretty impressive to see any business use restraint in their marketing, and that's what they did, right? I'm sure there was that guy at the table saying, we need to announce this. No artificial colors, no artificial ingredients. This is a big thing. People care about this, so let's plaster it all over our advertising, all over our packaging. And somebody said, no, let's not. Let's do effectively a soft launch to see what people say, and then if it's well-received, which it was, then we can crow about it. So I think it's genius. I'm really impressed.
So what do you think, maybe outside of the obvious health reasons, what do you think finally motivated a company like Kraft, who probably didn't need to change the formula? You know, people are still going to buy it, regardless of whether there's, you know, fiberglass shards in there, whatever.
I think
artificial
that's what they removed.
Things they put in there. I mean, it's not like it's going to change. So what do you, in your mind, do you have any insight into why or thoughts as to why they may have decided to do this after all these years?
Yeah, I'm curious. I have a hard time, for everything you said, I have a hard time believing it was anything other than marketing reasons, right? That if it was a dollar-saving move, it was something they would have done years ago. It's not like Kraft Mac and Cheese is hurting in the marketplace. So I got to think it was done for marketing reasons, that they're anticipating this organic, eat healthy, you know, this kind of bubble that we're seeing in the marketplace right now. They're anticipating it continuing to grow and people continuing to care more about what they put in their pie holes and, more importantly, what their kids are eating. So I think that's what this is about, that they see this trend, they want to get a hold of it, but they don't want to alienate any current customers. So they did this soft launch. I'd be really surprised if it was anything, if there was really you know, cost savings involved with this.
Yeah.
All right. So that has exhausted all our topics for the roundup show. Couple housekeeping things that, as I've mentioned on every podcast I think we've ever done, is ThunderTech puts out an annual trends book. You can still get your copy either digitally or hard copy at trends.thundertech.com. It's full of interesting marketing trends that you can read and talk about with your marketing buddies and sound smart. We are currently organizing our mid-year trends book. So if there's something that you're really dying to hear about, send us an email, go to our website at thundertech.com, reach out to us, and we may explore that topic in our mid-year magazine. As always, if you want to hit us up on the Twitter machine, you can tweet us at ThunderTech. So to wrap up, if you like what you hear today, please tell your friends. We'd love to have more subscribers. You can find this podcast at on our website, thundertech.com/podcast, where we have an archive of all of the hundreds of shows we have done before this one. And, of course, you can always find us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever fine podcasts are sold. And that's it for ThunderCast this week.